Okay, you're very welcome back to the programme following the break there. We are joined in studio by a huge band and getting bigger all the time. It's the Murder Capital. We have three members of the band, Gabriel, Pascal Bake from Letterkenny on bass. Good morning, Gabriel. Thanks very much for joining us.
What's happening, Greg?
It's good to have you here. How are you keeping?
Yeah, good. How are you?
I'm doing good. We also have James McGovern, the vocalist with the band. James, how are you keeping?
Very well, yeah.
Happy to be here.
Really? At this time?
100%.
You know it's 10 past 10 in the morning, don't you?
Is it? Haven't slept.
That's what I was suspicious of. Cahal Roper from Donegal Town. Cahal, how are you getting on? Good to have
good.
You.
Yeah, it's
good to have you on the show as well. Am I right in saying that this gig coming up on Thursday night, it's the RCC, it's the first formal or gig at all in Letterkenny in Donegal?
Yeah, first ever time that we've played in Letterkenny. Since we began the band, it's been sort of in the works between myself and Jeremy Hurd. He's helped so many artists, but definitely myself, like growing up, even when I was younger, in the RCC doing a module in TY with Declan McLafferty. Jeremy just has a very good way of quietly guiding you in the right direction without hindering your growth, and he's continued to do that like even to now. So yeah, I think when we got as far as Serbia this summer, I thought, well, we better get to Letterkenny.
Yeah,
there's no more excuses.
To some extent, it's kind of maybe the backwards route in that you know, you've blown up, you're playing huge gigs, and now you return home. Normally you have to ply your trade sort of in your own backyard for years on end.
Gabriel did do that though.
Yeah, I did do that, yeah.
Until he discovered you, James.
On a rainy November night in
who's Dublin. Who's the Andrew Ridley?
We're all friends here.
All right. And how did you actually come together as a band? I don't know. Do you want to take that one, James?
We came together in college in Dublin. We were like, doing some shows like under my name, doing some like college auditions to play some college shows and stuff like that. And then we just became a band. I don't know, it just felt like after a short period of time, it felt like a more collaborative project. And it just felt like it needed to be a band in its own right. And then that was myself, Pump and Irv, and some past members, Matt and Morgan at the time, who left the band. And then we found Gabriel P. Blake and Dermot Brennan down a dark alleyway.
What were they doing, James?
They were singing to each other.
That sounds very romantic.
It was.
Okay, I mean, listen, whatever floats your boat. And then the pathway to success, success, an overnight success that can take years, or people say, you know, how did you success happen? It happens slowly and then very quickly. How do you sort of describe the rise of this band and you know what's been driving it?
Just a rocket ship of creativity, I would say.
Artistically fleet-footed by the sounds of things.
A lot of hard work and just been like, are we going to do this? Definitely. And
so luck is not the answer then, so then.
Oh yeah, plenty of luck.
Our tour manager, George, said the last day, I don't believe in luck. I think you make your own luck, but you boys have bad luck.
Yeah. Or the other one is that, you know, the better you are, the luckier you are, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's lucky to be able to be doing it at all. I think so. That's the way we look at it.
Yeah, but you have played some big stages so far, Gabriel. Like, what's that been like?
It's been amazing. I think it was interesting being, like, we were booked for Coachella 3 times before we were able to play it. And like the same thing happened with Glastonbury, like the bookings were there, but then the world fell apart. So it made it all the sweeter then when we actually got to play those shows.
Did you have any concern that the buzz or momentum could have been lost in that 2 or 3 year period? You know, when you're on the, you know, on the brink of the big stages and then,
you know,
for some it didn't actually, for some the wheels came off in that interim.
Totally, yeah. I think
obviously not enough concern to stop.
Yeah. I think it was like when, like, anytime you were doubting that you weren't like doing enough, I was like, oh, well, Beyonce's not even doing a show at the minute. Like, do you know what I mean? Yeah. So,
our spirit animal, Beyonce.
Our spirit animal,
you didn't compare, talk about her all the time.
You didn't compare yourself to the Coronas or Chase Nabi straight up to Beyonce.
The Coronas are huge.
I'm only messing.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Stooges.
Okay, now come here. Where do you set your goals now, though? You know, I mean, obviously, you're only at the beginning here, but, you know, you've done bucket list stuff that I've talked to bands in the past, that the stuff that they want to do, you've done, right? And you never take anything for granted. You want to do it again and all. But what is there a plan?
I think we're just like, you know, a toddler who walked up its first step, to be honest. Yeah. And we're just going to keep fucking walking, like, you know.
I get you. Right, you're going to sing two for us.
Yes.
What's the first one?
The first one is a tune called Crying. And I like playing it a lot because I don't really cry that often. But I want to dedicate it to a mate of the band who just passed away there this week, Ronan McAwee. And we saw him out in Denver when we were in America. So just want to play this tune for Ronan.
I'm really trying to resist saying take it away, so will you just start?
Yeah, no problem.
Take it away. From recurring dreams that night, those eyes became two streams. One glance from day could send me into the sky. I await my fate. It's all one take. I'm needing to be so free, yeah. My love, my luck are chained to me. The stars catch face, they send me into the sky, lost in time and space. But wait for it. The colors drip from your eyes. I'm caught inside and I'm asking for a friend. I'm crying. Is this our end? Won't touch, heartbreak. I'm wandering into my garden sky. I'm way too high and I'm asking for myself. I'm trying, been crying. Is this our way to escape, our way through the gates we build? But wait for it. The colors drip from your eyes. I'm caught inside and I'm asking for a friend. I'm crying. Is this our end? Is this our end? Wait for. Colors drip from your eyes. I'm caught inside and I'm asking for a friend. I'm crying. Is this our end? Is this our end?
I wait, I'm waiting for you. 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 I will, I wait for. I will, I wait for. I wait, I'm waiting for you. I wait, I'm waiting for.
All right, Murder Capital there. Intense stuff, lads. There's no doubt about that. It sounds fantastic, because you know yourselves anyway. Well, 2024, is that already sort of, I mean, in this, I was going to say in this
that
business.
That what's next?
I was going to say this business as if I'm some sort of part of it. 2024, 23, yes, it is. It certainly is
this
next.
Is the first year that I've been asking, what year is it? Like, honestly.
That's right.
Yeah, it feels like that. 24. That's the drugs.
2024. 2024, but, more music, bigger shows.
But, yeah, I mean, I presume the diary's filling up already, is it?
Yeah, you know.
Because there is a kind of a narrow enough window there for all the big stuff.
The hypothetical diary is certainly filling up, yeah.
Okay, in your heads. What about your own gigs? Where is playing, other than the RCC? Well, what are the plans in that regard, touring and all that kind of stuff?
Well, we've got a 7-week tour coming up, the Cleanse Reflection Tour, starting October 5th in Berlin. Going all across Europe, Scandinavia, back into the UK, finishing up in Ireland, doing Dublin, Belfast, and Cork.
James, what's the key to the reach being? Is it sort of the online presence? People sort of getting to your music organically, or I mean, you can't really rely on radio play anymore, can you?
I think it's everything. I think it's everything nowadays. The thing is, like, all the promotion and all the, you know, TikTok edits in the world won't cut through. It's just the music, I think.
There has to be a product there, doesn't there?
Well, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't use that word, but, like, I would say there has to be a sort of a connection and a respect for the fact that when you're creating, it's not for an audience, it's for the individual.
Yeah. Who describes you as Irish punk, a post-punk band? Is that something you have a say on yourselves, or is it the management or promoters, or...?
It kind of was a scene that was sort of happening in Dublin at the time of when we started. And it's like, I think the first record sounded quite like
in
that
space, yeah.
And like, for a long time, that was the only reference point that people had their music. And I think maybe when our second record came out, people who really believed that that was like the entirety of what the band would be were kind of shocked with what came next. But yeah, I think it's just, it happened quite organically, but I don't think it was necessarily something that we had a mission statement of being, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. Go ahead. All right, well, I say we're talking to three members of Chasing Capital. They've played all the big stages, Glastonbury.
The Murder Capital.
The Murder Capital. What did I say?
Chasing Capital.
Chasing Capital. My word.
Chasing Abbey's on the main.
No, I saw them on the Late Late Show and I just don't get it.
That was a good Late Late Show. That was. Right. I thought the Late Late Show was actually pretty good.
I was just going to sit here and rinse people. Let's do it.
No, I think it was about 40 people around going, God, I wish I'd have done that. Why didn't I think of doing that? Anyway, no, listen, they're hugely popular. It's just not my thing. Right, so you've played all the big stages. More to come, of course, bigger and better. But this is the first gig back in Donegal at the RCC. What's the situation, Gabriel, with tickets and people getting in to see it?
Yeah, so tickets are available on our website, themurdercapital.com, and theregionalculturalcentre.com, but they're very limited. They're en route to selling out, so if you're thinking of coming down,
get them. I would imagine by the end of this conversation, they'll certainly be gone, because it's kind of gig. People probably will say we were there. Do you know what I mean? Kind of that one. If things keep going the way they're going. James, the Murder Capital, where did the name come from? Is it because you were established in Dublin?
Sure.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
it's just like any sort of idea or whatever, it just kind of comes to you, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And it just feels right. It's sort of like, you know, choosing a band name is like choosing a partner, I suppose. You know, you hope that it lasts forever.
So you went on Tinder and you went on Tinder.
I don't go online looking for love.
Well, why would you have to? You're the lead singer of a hugely successful band. Of course, you don't have to go on social media, lads. What's the second last song we're gonna do?
We're going to do Don't Cling to Life.
All right, brilliant stuff. Okay, yeah. This is The Murder Capital. Don't Cling to Life.
A crowd favourite. Take it away, Pumpkin.
With all your chances gone awry to be collected by your palms, if I had only stood aside, yeah, with our sediment in hand for a gold illusion to disarm, then dance around your lonely cave in my relentless state of charm. Let's stay enclosed for all our days. Then as it feigns a deadly grip, the world collapses round my room. The water floats, your floors adrift, your eyes demand the darkest blue. With hands held tight, it goes and goes, the light that once shone on the pale. Our steady hands return to stone. Let's stay enclosed for all our days. Let's dance and cry. Failing this, let's dance and cry. So we remember why we die. We remember why we die. Yeah, failing this, let's dance and cry. Failing this, let's dance and cry. So we remember why we die. Ooh, we remember why we die. And don't cling to life. Don't cling to life. Don't cling to life. Don't cling to life. There's nothing on the other side. There's nothing on the other side. Don't cling to life. Don't cling to life. Don't cling to life. Don't cling to life. There's nothing on the other side. There's nothing on the other side. Da.
Brilliant stuff. Thanks very much, lads. If you want, get tickets, and I'd say they're like hen's teeth at this stage already. They're playing the RCC this Thursday night. It's their first gig back in Donegal, having played at the main stage, at Glastonbury Electric Picnic, big American and European festivals. Number one in the album charts was already, but the big prize, of course, that Donegal gig coming up on Thursday evening. Thanks very much. Really appreciate your time. And is that your earliest gig yet?
No,
really not.
No,
we've done some 8 a.m.s, 6 a.m.s.
In KXP, I think we had to get up at 6 a.m.
Okay,
But yeah, just a shout as well that we're playing in Dunluce on Friday for Culture Night. That'll be on RT at 7 p.m. I think.
Excellent. All right.
Gabe doesn't forget the info.
No, I don't. I like the plugs. Like,
you know, someone has to do it, Gabe. Yeah. You know. Gabriel P. Blake from Letterkenny, of course. James McGovern. Well, James, where are you from?
I was born in Dublin and I grew up in Cork.
All right, brilliant stuff. Yeah. And Cathal Roper, Donegal Tan. Cathal, where did you get your interest in the guitar?
When I was 16, I always played like piano and clarinet and stuff.
Right. Dan, were you in the AVS? Were you?
Yeah.
Okay, very good.
Yeah. I was doing the Donegal Youth Orchestra up in the RCC as well.
Brilliant stuff. All right, fantastic.
And then you just heard AC/DC and that was it. Like,
that was the end of that. You turned 360 degrees and walked away. All right then, The Murder Capital, thanks very much indeed. That's Gabriel, James, Cahill, Damien and Dermot, not with us today, but you'll get the full show on Thursday. Thanks once again to The Murder Capital guys. Fantastic outfit, great to see them doing so well. Hi, can you please wish Cathal Roper and The Murder Capital good luck for their show at the Regional Cultural Centre and Culture Night 2023 on RTE on Friday. That comes in from Neil and Maggie, indeed. Right, okay. We're joined on the programme now by the Sinn Féin Finance spokesperson, Deputy Piers Doherty. Good morning, Piers. Thanks for your time today.
Good morning to you.
It's good to have you with us. Okay, you're calling on the government to support the party's proposals to introduce temporary mortgage interest relief for, when you say struggling homeowners, do you mean all homeowners, or is this a targeted proposal?
Yeah, it is targeted in the way that it's applied. So it obviously doesn't apply to second properties, holiday homes and so on. So it's principal private residences. So it's not all homeowners. So it's domestic homeowners. And the second thing is it only applies to a portion of the interest. So Greg, what's happened in the last year, since July of last year, is we've had, the ECB has raised the interest rates 10 times now, the latest being just last week. And a lot of that has passed through to customers in different ways. So if you're a tracker mortgage customer, unfortunately, you're going to get that rattle on your letterbox in the next week or so telling you that your interest has gone up in your mortgage for the 10th time since July last year. If you're one of the 100,000 people who've had their loans sold to vulture funds and sold with the support of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael at the time, even though I warned that interest rates would hike, then some people are already paying 10% interest rate in their loans. So most of these kind of interest rate hikes have been passed on to customers in that kind of category. And then for others, if you're on a fixed or if you're on a variable rate with a bank, it differs. Most people will have seen an increase, but not the same type of level of increases that you would have if you were on a tracker with the vultures or whatever. So what we're saying is that the government needs to introduce mortgage interest relief. And what that means is that the portion of interest, additional interest that you've been paying since last year, that 30% of that would be taken on by the state, up to a maximum of €1,500. So the person with a big mansion or whatever doesn't get the big bonanza here. We used to have mortgage interest relief. There was no cap in it, and it was for all mortgage, all interest. We're saying, no, it needs to be targeted. It needs to be what's happened as a result of the inflation, which is brought on by the war in Ukraine, and it needs to be temporary. So it is about supporting families in the middle of a cost of living crisis. And to kind of quantify this, Greg, the central bank in response to this did a bit of work on this. And this is before the most recent increase takes effect. But they said that one out of five households will see their mortgage interest rates or the cost of servicing their mortgage increase by €5,700 on average compared to last year. And two out of five households will be paying €3,000 more on their mortgage compared to last year. So that's a massive increase, a massive shock in terms of the income.
It is, of course, but Piers, none of this has happened by accident, has it? Because the ECB are raising interest rates because they're concerned about inflation. And I presume the idea being is they take money out of people's pockets and therefore it cools the economy down. So would softening that not mitigate against that action that ECB is taking? And then you couple that with the government spending more money than they're being suggested they might. In other words, you know, having more money in people's pockets in the economy, that this is just going to keep inflation going up, up, up. So whilst we might get a 1500 saving if we're lucky in a year, we're really going to be paying that back with skyrocketing inflation many times over the coming years if we don't do something about inflation.
Well, actually, it's quite interesting. And when you look at the figures in terms of the consumer price index, mortgage interest is a major contributing factor to the inflation rate that we have in the country. It's been estimated by some that it's about 1.4% of the overall inflation rate is mortgage interest relief. So mortgage interest has gone up by 50% in the last year. So that means it's a factor in inflation itself. So it's important to bear that in mind. But look, you're 100% right in terms of the ECB has a job to do, and that's to bring inflation down to what their target is, 2%. And their forecasts in the future show that they will get to that point in the next while, which is actually a good thing for everybody. But it's also good when we look at this proposal because it allows us to do this in a temporary basis. Because the ECB, once they start to get to that tipping point where inflation starts to reduce, which it is starting to reduce a wee bit, then they won't be increasing interest rates further, and they may even start to decrease them. And many economists think that that'll happen sometime next year. So it allows for us to do it temporary. The second thing is when the ECB is increasing interest rates, they're not really focused on the mortgage holder. The mortgage holder who took out a mortgage 10 years ago or 5 years ago, what they're really trying to do is to stop you borrowing tomorrow morning, or me borrowing or whatever, or to go out and buy a new car or even to buy the new house. They're trying to stop us borrowing and spending money in the economy today. And they're trying to stop businesses to do the same. Basically, they're trying to kind of turn the country into a kind of recession. And it's a very balancing, fine balancing act they have to do in relation to unemployment and recession and so on and so forth. But they're trying to take money out of the economy.
I wish we could find another tool.
To capture all of these people who've already borrowed.
I understand.
And that's why we're not talking about undoing everything the ECB's doing. What we're talking about is supporting a portion of the impact on these households.
Mm. I mean, we've got record savings on deposit here. We've got more millionaires than we ever had. I wish they could find another tool, another mechanism that didn't put the foot on the neck of people who are already struggling to tackle inflation. But it seems there aren't any alternatives. The banks have turned their backs on us with the mica, the defective concrete. They've literally just turned their backs on us. We're going to bail them out and rebuild their assets for them again. We've already bailed them out to the tune of billions. They're shafting savers. They're not passing on these interest rates to depositors. Why should the taxpayer again? Is there no mechanism we have to put the pressure on banks to lighten the load on their borrowers? They're still making absolute fortunes, rather than money coming out of our pockets again indirectly into the banks' pockets.
Yeah, well, look, on our proposal in terms of mortgage interest, Greg, one of the ways you actually fund this in a large way is actually looking at the levy that we have on banks. So we used to have a levy brought in 150 million euro up to 2 years ago. The government decided to cut that in half. They're only taking in 87 million. I completely opposed it at the time. And what's happened now? Because see, with inflation, there's winners and losers. The people who are the losers are ordinary homeowners who are paying through the nose now in terms of the mortgages. But the winners are the banks. The winners are the energy companies. The winners are some that are involved in greedflation. But the banks are making massive profits now. Back to Celtic Tiger profits. Our three banks are making half or 5 billion euro profit this year, that's estimated. And why? Because all the deposits we have on deposit with the banks, and there's huge amounts of deposits, they put them to the ECB. And the ECB, because they've increased interest rates, give more interest to the banks. So the banks are making huge amounts on this here. And through increasing the levy, we can actually put that money back into ordinary people's pockets. The issue of MICA, and this is seriously frustrating, and I've done a lot of work in relation to this here. Behind the scenes, I've met with the central bank. We've had very, very detailed discussions in relation to case studies in terms of the central bank and their role as a consumer from a consumer protection point of view. I've met with the BPFI, the Bank and Payments Federation, and I've encouraged them, and thankfully they did do this, to meet with the focus groups. And we've raised this in numerous times with the Minister for Finance in relation to having a pathway or more supports for MICA homeowners. I expect that we're going to see something in relation to that, Greg. I got the Finance Committee to write to the banks in the last number of weeks, and we've seen responses come in the last number of days saying that they are working with the department to actually look at a kind of bespoke product. And I know tomorrow there is a meeting that I'll be engaging with the Bank and Payments Federation in relation to MICA. Will it go far enough? I would imagine it's not. I would imagine it's more to do with the bridge financing, and we've been looking for zero interest rates for bridge financing and all of that. But the bigger issue is this here. The banks has skin in the game here. You nailed it on its head. We're rebuilding the assets off the banks, and the banks have skin in the game, and they should be contributing to this, not just, you know, making no profit on the back of it. They should actually be contributing.
And what I don't understand is that on one hand, they plead ignorance when people contact them. We don't really know what's going on and blah, blah, blah. And then on another hand, they say their loan books or whatever the terminology reflects these devalued assets. You know what I mean? I can't square that circle to me. Either you either know what's going on, or your actual loan blocks to your shareholders reflect the fact that you've got an awful lot of properties that are actually worthless. But anyway, do you think their books reflect that fact?
Well, that's actually one of the questions I asked them through the Finance Committee. And we have the banks coming in tomorrow, or today, sorry, to the Finance Committee. So some of these will be put to them in person, where we ask them what type of assessment have they carried out in relation to their loan books in terms of MICA. And it varies. We know, for example, Ulster Bank had a kind of desktop exercise that looked at kind of potential exposure to MICA, but it's very varied. in relation to how it does and how each bank operates. But look, the long and the short of it is, in my view, what the banks have done is they've calculated that because these are your primary homeowners and they've nowhere else to go, that they're not going to default on their mortgage. If the banks thought that people were going to default on their mortgage and hand back the keys, then the banks would have a massive, massive problem. But they have calculated that this will be resolved through a lot of sweat and tears for the homeowners in the first instance, with some support coming from the state, and the banks can just sit back and watch their assets being restored. And I think it's an appalling way. I think they, at the end of the day, the banks should share some of the burden in relation to this. And, you know, there are ways to do this. As I said, you know, if we need to increase the levy on the banks to actually provide that support, then let's do it. But look, there are a lot of issues wrong with the scheme at the minute. We'll be bringing forward our own legislation to try and get this scheme to 100%. And that's our commitment to the people of Donegal. But in the meantime, we need to try and work with the fact that people have their homes demolished. People are going to credit unions for finance. That is really, really expensive. People are having to borrow off neighbours and
I think
friends.
That's the minority, though. My suspicion is the majority of people actually aren't engaging. They're hoping for a change in government or successful court cases
because we're only at the early stages.
To reiterate that commitment again, because there is a bit of cynicism in it. We're seeing political parties being formed as a backup plan effectively, and there's no guarantees. People should not underestimate the ability or the possibility that this government that's currently in at the moment could be re-elected if the numbers go a certain way. But Sinn Féin is committed to a fully funded 100% redress scheme for defective concrete block homeowners in Donegal and beyond.
Yeah, we are going to produce legislation, and Ona Brin has been engaged with the different campaign groups in relation to this. And we will be producing legislation, which is the legislation that we would be implementing in government. So people will see well in advance of the next election, whether it's locals or generals or European elections, where Sinn Féin stands on all of this issue. Our commitment in relation to 100% is there. We don't believe the grant system is the right way to deal with this, Greg. And I don't think, like, as I said, I was going to make the point that some people, and we are in the minority at the minute because we're only at the early stage of this year, they're going to credit unions. Many people aren't going to get a loan from a credit union. Many people aren't going to get a loan from your friends or neighbours or families and all the rest. This scheme is not acceptable in my view. We shouldn't be asking people to rebuild their own homes. It is for people who want to build their homes, who people who are involved in self-builds. It's a torturous process for people who have no interest in doing it or who don't have the experience. We shouldn't be asking them to do it. So there's a different way of doing this, and we want to press forward. And that, like, whatever other people do in terms of campaigns or political parties, that's okay. Everybody needs to do their own thing. People will judge us in relation to our sincerity in this. We'll judge our leader in relation to her sincerity on it, and that's fine. But look, this is affecting my county in a huge way.
Look, ultimately, people will judge on delivery as well.
And that's it. Like, and look, you know, we're close to this. It's close to the bone. It's relatives, it's friends, it's people you went to school with. They're all affected. We know that it's not an issue of bricks and mortars. This is mental health. This is family breakdown. This is just, we need to find a solution to this. And there is a solution, and the state needs to step in. And we do have the resources. Like, that's the reality. We have the resources to do this. And, you know, we shouldn't be placing this on the ordinary person because it wasn't their fault.
It's multi-annual. It's multi-generational. There's a huge clawbacks. There's huge positives in terms of job creation. We could be targeting careers and what have you towards this. But anyway, listen, it's when we in Donegal we start talking about houses and mortgages, invariably we're going to end up on that topic. I do appreciate you staying with me. I know there's a lot of demand on you. Thank you very much indeed. That's Deputy Piers Doherty, Sinn Féin spokesperson on finance. Now, you're welcome back to the programme. We're joined in studio by two guests. Ken, good morning, Ken. Thank you for your time. And James Devaney, Drug and Alcohol Rehab CE Scheme Supervisor with Letterkenny CDP. James, good morning to you.
Morning, Greg. How are you?
We're speaking ahead of Saturday, the 23rd of September. You're hosting a recovery walk in the town park in Letterkenny from 1 p.m. until 3 p.m. And it's to promote healthy recovery from drink and drugs. Are you seeing any trends, James, in the drug and alcohol rehab in terms of, you know, people's dependency on drink and drugs? Are you seeing an increase? Are you seeing changes in what people are becoming dependent on?
There would be slight changes. Yes, there is the change. Cocaine would be becoming more apparent, but on the ground, alcohol would still be the number one coming forward for people seeking help. There's also a change. There's more people coming forward for help as well.
Does that represent, do you think, an increase in people dependent on alcohol, or is it maybe more awareness of the services that you're providing, people saying, right, you know, I've heard other people have got help, I want help? Yeah, what do you think it is?
I think there's a bit of both there, Greg.
Yeah.
I think there's a bit of both. There is more people coming forward, and I suppose that's what Saturday's about. It is about reducing the stigma and reducing the shame around addiction and around, and especially around recovery. With any other illness, people can come forward, people can talk about it, say if it's diabetes or even cancer, people can talk about it quite openly. When it comes to addiction, it's almost like the elephant in the room that nobody likes to address. Nobody likes to talk, nobody likes to come forward. For some people, it can be a very uncomfortable journey coming forward at the start. It can be an uncomfortable conversation. But events like Saturday, where we show that recovery, number one, is possible, but also that recovery can be a very positive life style change for them as well. It opens up a whole new life for them.
Yeah, but there's a stage to get to before you get to the stage of
that.
I think everybody knows people who you suspect they have an alcohol problem, but they don't see it themselves.
And
often in speaking to people in the past, there comes a point where they realise it, but you can go for quite some time, whereas you think everything's okay.
Yeah, and that's where an awful lot of the hidden harm in Ireland happens, just at that point before the come for help. Mm. And that's why in CDP, there would be a lot of help there. You know, you have your White Oaks, you have your AA, you have your NA, but in CDP, we would have two support workers, outreach support workers in the community, helping people bridge that gap. People who's just not ready yet to stop, but they're on that first piece of motivational change. Mm. And the two support workers help them round that wheel a little bit further, where they end up in maybe addiction services, or they end up in White Oaks, or they go to NA. And CDP also, we have a CE scheme that has 14 participants on it in the first early stages of recovery to help them navigate all those, I suppose, all those
are
things.
Are some of them still
scary.
Drinking?
Not always. Some can be. They're just starting off on the journey.
That's what I mean, yeah.
You know, very often the road to recovery can be dotted with periodic relapses at the start. Mm. Very few get it the very first. I'm in recovery myself. I didn't get it the first time myself. It's always dotted with bits and pieces of relapse.
We'll come back to your situation. Ken, 15 years in recovery now?
Yeah.
You started drinking actually really quite late, didn't you?
Yeah, I started. I didn't take my first drink until I was 21, which is quite late, you know. But I suppose it became problematic very early, though, you know.
Really?
What I mean?
Okay.
Yeah, it wasn't like it was maybe 8 or 10 years later that I started the people thing. When I look back on it, you know, and when I talk to people, that I mean, family and stuff, it was nearly a problem straight away, you know. Mm.
And so was it the fact that
they talk about the isms of alcohol, you know what I mean, that I would have had a lot of stuff probably before I took a drink, you know, a lot of it. It's probably just getting ready. But, sorry, you were going to say something?
No, I was going to say, just to sort of get us a better understanding of it, is it the fact that you would get intoxicated really quite quickly with a small amount of drink? Did you not know when to stop drinking? Did it change your personality? Like, what do you think those around you saw in those early years, Ken, or what did you see in yourself?
Yeah, I think, you know what I mean, certainly would have changed my personality, but it would have made me, I would have been, as a child, I would have suffered a lot of anxiety. A lot of stuff would have gone on in my early childhood, you know what I mean, with schools and stuff like that. I would have been in hospitalised a lot when I was a child. And so I think that all came out. And obviously when I took the drink for the first time, I felt part of, you know, and I was able to communicate better with people, you know what I mean, and I was able to think. But I went on that journey of life, of having children, of getting married, having children, buying a house. I had a good job in Dublin. I was working in the hospital in Dublin for 20 years and holding down, you know, functioning, you know, problematic drinking, you know. And certainly, it was it wasn't, going back to what you were saying, definitely wasn't the quantity, you know what I mean? It wouldn't take much for me to be drunk, and I never drank from the top shelf, as they say, you know? Never had a problem with drugs or gambling or anything like that. But responsibility sort of went out the window, you know what I mean? And, like, not being there for the kids, you know, physically being there, but not, you know, present.
As part of your, sorry to fast forward, Ken, as part of your recovery, as you just mentioned, that regret too, you know, guilt. Do you know what I mean? Because you're dealing with an addiction. You're if that's how you describe it, you want to be clear of that. But there's some stuff that can't be undone. Do you have to work through that as well as part of this process?
Absolutely. That was the beginning of that would have been in White Oaks in 2008. Okay. Getting an insight into, because I remember going and being in White Oaks and them telling me the easy part of this kind is going to be putting down the drink.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I didn't know. There was a lot of stuff I would have heard in White Oaks and in the early times of AA of things that weren't going in. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yep.
But as I stayed around and started to recover, I started to learn more and more, and learn every day, like even to be here today, you know, and challenge myself and learn about, you know, my triggers and stuff like that. And so I certainly learned a lot in White Oaks. And I often say, like, you know, White Oaks got me going, but it's the likes of AA and people like me, like James, and people in the fellowship that keep me sober. But obviously, I have to maintain, you know, regret. Thanks God, I don't have a whole lot of regret, you know what I mean? Because I
said, you've had a few, but then again, too few to mention, quote the great Frank Sinatra. Yeah.
So I've been ongoing working with.
But how do you characterize your 26 years? Because obviously, you know, you were there and a provider, I presume, as well. And what I mean? Obviously, maybe you feel that the things you missed out on, but you were there, right? So how would you characterize that 26 years as a drinker?
Yeah, I always say, like, you're just in a fog, you know, for that length. And I would have suffered with blackouts like many do. You know what I mean?
And then the anxiety that triggers and all that.
And the anxiety
kind
of the drinking. Yeah. And then what I learned then is just, like, I can't say enough about family. And people speak a lot about family. Like, you know what I mean? It is a family disease. You know what I mean? It's been said many times. You know what I mean? And it's communication would have been a big thing coming out of treatment, you know, with family. You know, because sometimes we can go off on our own thing and we're going to meet. We replace it nearly with meeting somewhere, you know. So I had to learn to try and communicate with my family. And so we went on, try and go on this journey together of recovery, you know. And actually, just for myself, I mean, I haven't left White Oaks in 15 years. I'm still there. I've been a volunteer there for the last 15 years.
Yeah. And was there a point? Was there a point that you says, right, there is something going on here, there is a problem, there is a... Yeah. Is there something that you said, right, I have to change this?
It would have been said to me for years, even by work colleagues and family, that I needed help.
Right.
But it wasn't until I had a major incident in 2008, in the sense that there was a lot of stuff, you know, I mean, that I lost, you know. And that was the first time that I picked up the phone for to get help for myself. You see, I would have been good at manipulating my mother and father and getting people to do things for me, you know. I needed to be good at that in order to keep the addiction going.
You were functioning, and you did what you had to do to continue.
So for the first time in 2008, I lifted the phone and I rang White Oaks, and they began the process of getting me into treatment and stuff like that. And, like, thank God, so far, it hasn't been all a bed of roses by any means, you know what I mean? Because, as you say, the crutch is gone. And I have to learn to live without it. But I, from my personal experience, and like same as James here, I get so much from carrying the message and helping others if I can.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not trying to look for people to fix every day of the week.
No, it doesn't. You don't come across like that. No, but what it comes across as me is you're saying, this was my experience. Are you feeling that? Well, if you are and you want to change, I can sort of, this is what I did. You know what I mean?
And that's what carrying the message is.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? Yeah. Right. And Caroline, can you get the news in there, please, if you don't mind? James, we're going to take a quick break for the news, if that's okay.
No problem.
We'll come back to both of you then. I don't want to rush through. I won't hold you very much longer, but I just don't want to say, right, that's where we have to leave it because of the news. So you're all right for five or 10 minutes. All right, stay where you are. Thanks very much indeed for that.